And it is 9 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 12 noon in the East Coast. And it's 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is August 16, 2017. And this is Orly Benny Davis with the Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to wind down the Jewish year. And we are going to listen to some words of wisdom from our Rabbi Sacks from England, and we're going to try to catch our breath and look around and see really what is happening in America with all those rallies. We're not going to take it too seriously because sometimes, you know, the times, the politics of the things make everything go global and, you know, go all over the wire. But the truth of the matter, do we really, really think that America is that different from yesterday? Do we really, really think that they can take over? You know, the South really changed. And I'm talking to you from somebody who really lived in the South, loved the South, and understand that somebody really, really got under the skin to get all the goose out, you know? Because those days are over as far as we are concerned. And to see all those rallies of the left tearing down the statues. Do you know something about history? If you don't remember it, you will repeat the mistake of it, right? So you have to give some respect to the history. And those left wings that are out and about since November or before, when they knew that they're going to lose the election, they started it 2016. This is August. We are so tired, sick and tired of you all. And President Trump, poor baby, he didn't have a day of peace since he come to office. You, America, keep him busy. And we here in the Holy Land, we're going to start keeping our prayer for you all every day to make sure that America stay great. All right, so let's start with Rabbi Sacks, the wonderful Rabbi Sacks.
There has never been a love story like it in all of history, the love of this people for that city. Jerusalem is mentioned something like 660 times in Tanakh. And even though the temple was destroyed twice, and even though the city has been besieged 23 times and captured and reconquered 44 times, Jews never ceased to pray for Jerusalem, about Jerusalem, and facing Jerusalem. Somehow, it was where every Jewish prayer met and ascended to heaven. And there's been nothing like it. Other cities, other faiths may hold Jerusalem holy, but they have holier places. Rome, Constantinople, Mecca, Medina. Jews only had this one city. A tiny city, but somehow it was the place, said Maimonides, from which the divine presence was never exiled. In those critical and tense weeks before the Six-Day War, I was just coming near the end of my first undergraduate year at Cambridge University. And for the 3 weeks beforehand, we all felt that something terrible was going to happen after all the troops were massed on the Egyptian and Syrian borders. And all of us, all of my generation born after the Holocaust, feared that we were about to witness a second Holocaust. All the Jewish students, vast numbers of them, turned up in the little shul in Thompson's Lane to pray. I've never seen so many people there before or since. The atmosphere was absolutely intense. And for me, it was life-changing. As soon as we saw the paratroopers, as soon as we heard the words, Harabayat Biyadenu, I knew I had to go there and see it for myself. And I went there, and looking down, from Haratzofim, from Mount Scopus, down on the old city, I suddenly realized that I was standing at the very place that the Mishnah and Gemara talk about at the end of Makot, when Rabbi Akiva and three of his rabbinical colleagues are standing on Haratzofim, looking down on the ruins of the temple, and the other rabbis are weeping, and Rabbi Akiva is smiling. And he says, "Why are you weeping?" And they say, "Look, the Holy of Holies, and it's ruins. A fox is walking through there. The place that only the holiest man, the high priest, could enter only on the holiest day, and now it's ruins. Of course we're weeping. Why are you not weeping?" And Rabbi Akiva said, "Because there were two prophets who gave prophecies. One, Micha, saw the city in its destruction, and another one, Zechariah, saw it rebuilt. And saw it as a place where Od Yeshvu Zekenim Uzekenot, Berchovot Yerushalayim, where old men and women would sit at peace in the streets of Jerusalem, and the streets would be filled with the sounds of children playing. So if I have seen the fulfillment of the prophecy of destruction, am I not convinced that there will one day come true the prophecy of rebuilding and restoration?" And as I stood where Rabbi Akiva stood 2,000 years earlier, I said to myself, if he had only known how long it would take, would he still have believed? And then I suddenly realized, of course he would still have believed, because Jews would never give up hope of Jerusalem. We never allowed it to escape our minds. In any of our prayers, at our weddings, we remember Jerusalem. Every time we comfort mourners, we say, "Amakom yenachem etchem betoch sha'avelei Tzion v'Yerushalayim." You know, Jews were a circumference whose center was Jerusalem. And I suddenly realized that people that could never forget this holy city would one day come back. And as I stood there, soon after the Six-Day War, I suddenly realized that faith brought back Jews to Jerusalem and will one day rebuild its ruins. That is the most powerful testimony of faith I know. What's special about Jerusalem today is, despite all the tensions which are real, nonetheless, it's a place, the Holy of Holies, still to Jews. But also on the Temple Mount are two mosques. It's a place of prayer for Muslims. There in the Old City are some of the holiest churches in the whole of Christendom. So it is, nonetheless, a city of peace. One of the very few places in the Middle East, one of the very few places in the world. Holy to three distinct faiths, where those faiths pray together in freedom and in peace. And that's come only under Israeli rule in the last 50 years. Somebody once said about Israel, and you could certainly say this about Jerusalem, that it's not that long and it's not that wide, but it's very deep. So Jerusalem is very deep. And somehow within its relatively narrow confines, it contains, in Walt Whitman's phrase, multitudes. The other incredible thing about Jerusalem is that somehow magic happens with our sense of time. So, for instance, the walls of Jerusalem were destroyed by every conqueror and then rebuilt using the stones that had the previous walls. So if you look at the stones of the walls around Jerusalem, they come from all the eras, somehow past and present, the old and the new are all jumbled together. And then you think of this city, the oldest of the old, and yet Time magazine a couple of years ago listed Jerusalem as one of the top five in the world, which is an emerging center of high tech. So it's the oldest of the old, and it's the newest of the new. It is the living symbol of what Theodor Herzl titled his book about the return to Zion, Altneuland, the old new land, the old new city for the old and renewed people.
All right, and we are back. This is Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. That was Rabbi Sacks from England, which is exceptional. He spoke about Jerusalem and how the three religions stay together and pray together. I hope one day they can pray on Temple Mount, the Jewish and the Christian too. The idea is that whoever tried to threaten us anymore, that, you know, we are not fearful whoever tried to raise the flag of, anti-Semitism, so any racism for whatever is, for any of those religions, it doesn't matter. We are here and we are strong because our motto of the show is there is a God and it's not us. So trust in him to make the difference in the world for everyone. So let's go on. Let's go on and listen to what, the latest from the news in America. We have, of course, some update about what Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, have to say after the events in Charlottesville. Very sad happening, but here is his remarks.
To meet with my economic team about trade policy and major tax cuts and reform. We are renegotiating trade deals and making them good for the American worker, and it's about time. Our economy is now strong. The stock market continues to hit record highs. Unemployment is at a 16-year low, and businesses are more optimistic than ever before. Companies are moving back to the United States and bringing many thousands of jobs with them. We have already created over 1 million jobs since I took office. We will be discussing economic issues in greater detail later this afternoon, but based on the events that took place over the weekend in Charlottesville, Virginia, I would like to provide the nation with an update on the ongoing federal response to the horrific attack and violence that was witnessed by everyone. I just met with FBI Director Christopher Wray and Attorney General Jeff Sessions. The Department of Justice has opened a civil rights investigation into the deadly car attack that killed one innocent American and wounded 20 others. To anyone who acted criminally in this weekend's racist violence, you will be held fully accountable. Justice will be delivered. As I said on Saturday, we condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence. It has no place in America. And as I have said many times before, no matter the color of our skin, we all live under the same laws. We all salute the same great flag. And we are all made by the same Almighty God. We must love each other, show affection for each other, and unite together in condemnation of hatred, bigotry, and violence. We must rediscover the bonds of love and loyalty that bring us together as Americans. Racism is evil, and those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate groups that are repugnant to everything we hold dear as Americans. We are a nation founded on the truth that all of us are created equal. We are equal in the eyes of our Creator. We are equal under the law, and we are equal under our Constitution. Those who spread violence in the name of bigotry strike at the very core of America. 2 days ago, a young American woman, Heather Heyer, was tragically killed. Her death fills us with grief, and we send her family our thoughts, our prayers, and our love. We also mourn the two Virginia State Troopers who died in service to their community, their commonwealth, and their country. Troopers Jay Cullen and Burke Bates exemplify the very best of America, and our hearts go out to their families, their friends, and every member of American law enforcement. These three fallen Americans embody the goodness and decency of our nation. In times such as these, America has always shown its true character, responding to hate with love, division with unity, and violence with an unwavering resolve for justice. As a candidate, I promise to restore law and order to our country, and our federal law enforcement agencies are following through on that pledge. We will spare no resource in fighting so that every American child can grow up free from violence and fear. We will defend and protect the sacred rights of all Americans, and we will work together so that every citizen in this blessed land is free to follow their dreams in their hearts and to express the love and joy in their souls. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless America. Thank you very much.
Mr. President,
all right, that was President Trump live at the White House. For the first time hearing from him specifically calling out white supremacists, the KKK, neo-Nazis, saying we must unite against hatred, bigotry.
Yes, she better believe it. We need to unite against bigotry, racism, and everything that we, you know, America stands for freedom, for liberty. It doesn't go hand in hand with all this rhetoric of the white supremacy. They might be scary at time, but I'm sure that they're going to go back to wherever they come from. Now, President Trump had so much on his hands, and this rhetoric that people from the left say that, you know, today he corrected this. These remarks were, you know, after he corrected it already in the second time. Now, the third time he came and he spoke, he said, both sides, there are bad people, both sides, they're all to blame. And everybody was picking and saying what? He was saying that the neo-Nazis and the left are the same. Well, it doesn't matter what he said. It means that we need to shape up. We all have some good and some bad. And every time the left wings, you know, whatever he said, they'll pick on him. So whatever you said in the left, I'm going to tell you, we're going to stand with our president. The president, Donald Trump, is actually the ruler, the new ruler of the free world. He actually delivers. You know, you can shout and scream Hillary Clinton, all, you know, purple plan and revolution, she can go and do whatever she wants. Maybe, you know, go bake a cake like you never did, okay? It's about time. Your nan, you know, your grandmother already, give it a break. She never get over it. She lost. So what? You know, I guess you got a run, a good run on American, you know, taxpayer dollars. It's about time you get off that train. And let us be, because the world is crazy as it is. And look what Donald Trump has to deal with this week, the last week. North Korea. Let's listen to that.
The leaders vowed to cooperate on putting an end to the rogue state's provocations.
President Trump worked the phones late into the evening Friday. He called the president of China to seek his help and his influence over North Korea. The White House says both leaders are committed to removing the nuclear threat from the Korean Peninsula.
If anything happens to Guam, there's going to be big, big trouble in North Korea.
So really, we're in a very tense standoff here, and the risk is that someone will get nervous and actually pull the trigger.
The tensions between North Korea and the U.S. have put a damper on investor sentiment. Global market cap last week shrank by over 1.4 trillion U.S. dollars.
They're conducting exercises on the Korean Peninsula later this month, while North Korea's warned them against this. What's your take on this? Amid this escalating tension, could that maybe be the next flashpoint?
So I think North Korea is trying to intimidate the U.S. and its allies. It's normal that treaty allies would do exercises together to make sure that everyone's prepared and that we're interoperable. The North Koreans shouldn't be able to back us down from this. On the flip side, the North Koreans themselves keep testing their nuclear weapons, and that is what really raises tensions, especially when they point them in the direction of the U.S. or its allies.
So if the U.S. were to back down from flying this exercise in the next few weeks, does that make the U.S. look weak for backing down on a threat that the North Koreans have made?
It doesn't make any sense for the U.S. to back down on this. These exercises are very complicated to plan, and they're normal parts of what our U.S. military does. So backing down off of this would actually be really troubling. What's more important is that we're opening lines of communication to make very clear to the North Koreans what kind of behavior would provoke a retaliatory response.
President Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping reiterated their mutual commitment to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula in a phone call on Friday. Meanwhile, Japan has begun to bring in a missile defense system. In another call, President Trump reassured the governor of Guam that the United States stands ready to ensure their safety. Now, North Korea says that nearly 3.5 million workers, party members, and soldiers volunteered to join or rejoin its army to resist the new UN sanctions and fight against the U.S.
We're talking about nearly 30,000 American troops on the Korean Peninsula, over 100 or hundreds of thousands of American citizens who work and do business there and go to school there. We're talking about a population in South Korea of 50 million that's all within reach of North Korea's conventional missiles. If this conflict blows up, it could go very quickly.
Stepping outside his Bedminster club after meeting with his top diplomatic and national security team Friday evening, the president took questions for a fourth time in just 2 days, often focused on stepped-up tensions with North Korea's Kim Jong-un.
This man will not get away with what he's doing, believe me.
The president would not discuss any military planning in response to the regime's progress with a miniaturized nuclear weapon and its threats to launch missiles toward the U.S. island of Guam.
President Trump and Kim Jong-un trading threats of military action, each more severe than the last. After the president warned the U.S. was locked and loaded, North Korea responded with a threat of its own, promising tragic doom to America. Here's ABC's chief global affairs correspondent, Martha Raddatz.
Today, a new warning from Kim Jong-un's regime after nearly a week of threats on both sides. North Korean state media sending this message. If the Trump administration does not want the American empire to meet its tragic doom, they had better talk and act properly. The threat comes after North Korea earlier this week said it was crafting a plan to send 4 missiles to the waters off Guam.
U.S. President Donald Trump and French President Emmanuel Macron agreed to work together on the tense situation on the Korean Peninsula, with the aim of getting North Korea to conform to its international obligations. In a phone call on Saturday, the two leaders discussed the need to confront the increasing danger associated with the North's destabilizing behavior. Washington and Pyongyang have recently been using heated rhetoric against each other, following continued threats from the Kim Jong-un regime.
And its latest message clearly a response to President Trump's string of warnings, from his Friday tweet saying the U.S. military is locked and loaded to his latest.
And if anything happens to Guam, there's going to be big, big trouble in North Korea.
But should conflict break out, it's the citizens here of South Korea who could pay the steepest price.
There are also 14,000 tubes of artillery which could rain down on South Korea's capital of Seoul if they intended to do that, with over 26 million people caught in the crosshairs.
The North so reclusive that these leaflets with messages are launched into North Korea from the South. Lee Min-bok says he defected to the South after reading one. And now delivers his own.
After reading the leaflet, I just knew that the North regime was all false, so I decided to flee to the South.
What do you think it's like for the people who are still in the North today?
I just have to say one word. It is slavery, mentally and physically.
What you can see from this observation point is really just propaganda. Across the river, North Korea, you can see some apartment buildings, some other structures. But if you look through those observation glasses, you can see they're all fake.
Crucial to solving this crisis, China, North Korea's biggest trading partner. China urging restraint from both sides in a phone call between President Trump and President Xi late last night.
The world is used to fiery rhetoric from North Korea, but not from a U.S. president, made all the more serious this time because intelligence analysts believe that the North can now arm an ICBM with a nuclear warhead.
All right, so Kim Jong-un is acting more responsible than our own president. Here to react to that comment, senior fellow for the London Center for Policy Research, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. Tony, great to see you this morning.
See you, Clayton.
Keith Ellison, your immediate thoughts to that comment.
He needs to figure out what side he's on, and clearly it's not on the side of America. Look, I don't mean to speak in such direct and blunt terms, but we are here because of the failure of diplomacy. And somehow this congressman fails to recognize and study history of how we got here. It's time for him to stop being a partisan and start being an American. And that's where we're at. This is not about anti-war. This is about the fact that we're trying to prevent war and end one, which actually started in 1951. So I do, with all due respect to the congressman, read the history books, figure out what side you're on, and move forward.
I fail to understand how the president's comments about locked and loaded, and if the North Korean regime acts, we're going to respond, how that is out of line.
Clayton, that's kind of the, you know, if President Obama would have said that, he would have been applauded. And look, a president, he's looking for his Goldilocks moment. He didn't say enough on this issue, but he says too much on this. Look, this is all about trying to be very clear on consequences. This president is recognizing the fact that the situation in North Korea has gotten worse, not better, by the complete failure of diplomacy and the policy of appeasement for the past 30 years. So, you know, he's making it as clear as he can that this is going to change, that now there will be the potential of and likelihood of military action, of continued provocations. And going back to Congressman Ellison's comment, look, it is not President Obama, President Trump, anyone else on our side who's been firing missiles across the Korean Peninsula trying to prompt a military response. And let me say something else really quickly. Something completely unreported here is the fact that North Koreans along the DMZ, the Demilitarized Zone, have had a 3,000% uptick over the past 8 years of provocations. That means small armed conflicts that are not reported. So, again, it's time for a new message to be sent, and President Trump is sending that.
Right. A missile fired towards Guam is a slap right to the face of America. And Chelsea Handler tweeting this yesterday: to all the generals surrounding our idiot in chief, the longer you wait to remove him, the longer your name will appear negatively in history, basically calling for a coup, a military coup in the United States, because somehow he's acting unhinged.
Well, look, Guam is U.S. territory, and let me be clear on this. If the North Koreans hit Guam with a conventional weapon or even come close, nuclear conventional, there will be a military response. Let me just be very clear on that. And to this point, look, this is what we call sedition. Title 18, I think, Section 215. And so I think Ms. Handler needs to be visited by the Secret Service, because this is calling for the removal, an illegal removal, of a duly elected president. And this is no small issue. I am completely fed up as a citizen of the left getting away with this complete, inappropriate and continuous call for the president's removal. He won. Get over it. Move on. And I think people like her who are calling for essentially a violent overthrow of the president need to be looked at seriously for what they're saying, because it is indeed, in this case, I believe, a violation of clear U.S. code. So.
Yeah. Well, I think it would be great for all Americans to try to come together on this issue.
I couldn't agree more, but she's not.
All right, we are back. You hear them saying the same thing, you know, the military people, like the left needs to back up, because what happened with President Trump and the handling of North Korea was a complete success, because this diplomatic crisis that you all have, it's because the neglect, the negligence of so many, many people that used to be in office and didn't do nothing about it. But let me tell you something. While we were waiting all to see what North Korea is doing, America did the right thing. It scheduled the launch of space cargo mission to the International Space Station, and NASA, Kennedy Center, Space Center in Florida, send it. send it over the 14th of August. It was 7 p.m. In Israel, in Jerusalem. It was the same time, right? Just about now. It happened on the 14th, so a day before they launch a missile with a cargo that you don't know what it contained. President Donald Trump did not bluff, as far as I'm concerned, because I follow what he's doing, and he did great, and the North Korean maybe is ready to talk now. Let's hope. And on that note, I want to send a great song to the president and to salute him from the Holy Land with much blessing and a lot of gratitude. And hopefully he'll bring the embassy to Jerusalem like he promised. All right, let's listen to it.
Tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom and they can't take that.
God bless the USA and the incredible President Donald J. Trump. You guys don't understand what you got there. You have no clue what this man is capable of doing. You think about, I don't know in what color, but I've been following him for probably more than 20 years since I knew he was in the construction industry. And since we were, you know, like a little startup construction company when I arrived to America, in California, we start building, you know, slowly. But he was like the icon that we watch for. And he built those buildings. And he made so much graceful things that I was like in awe. I would walk by New York City by the towers and I would say, my God, this is amazing. And I can't wait for him to build the Embassy of America in Jerusalem. I wouldn't like anybody else, nobody else to build it, just the president, because he is special. He is special. And you start loving him because he will look. Whatever happens, and he still works hard day, night. He never stops, and he works, and he gets your, you know, negotiations online. And, of course, they let him down in Congress. But it's up to the American people to vote them back. So I hope that they change their mind before they change them. To remember that there is some wisdoms that we still have to catch. You know, the Bible is a book that they don't let you all teach in school. And it's the most sudden news that anybody can tell their children that, I'm sorry, you cannot learn it in school because you must go only to church or to synagogue or wherever else. This is the most incredible book in the history of mankind. It's the most sold book in the history of mankind. And for some reason, those left wings, anti-God, because there is no other reason for that, they decided to omit that from the school book list. Like it's gonna damage what? Or if it's learned elsewhere, you better teach it right? No, they're trying to create a different reality. You know, they live in a virtual reality where, you know, natural creation happens by bumps. You know, by it just happened. Even though to happen, to start, you know, the whole concept of God is something that you still need to grasp, because anybody who thinks that he understands what God is all about doesn't understand nothing, because nobody can understand it. That's why it's so wonderful. That's why I'm so excited about it all the time, because it's amazing. I can learn again and again and again and never get it right. Or get it, you know, sometimes. If I'm lucky, he's giving me some, you know, some wisdom too. So let's listen to more of Rabbi Sacks. I really want you to hear what he has to say in TED. He even got invited to TED. Good for him. All right.
These are the times, said Thomas Paine, that try men's souls. And they're trying ours now. This is a fateful moment in the history of the West. We've seen divisive elections and divided societies. We've seen a growth of extremism in politics and religion, all of it fueled by anxiety, uncertainty, and fear of a world that's changing almost faster than we can bear, and the sure knowledge that it's going to change faster still. I have a friend in Washington. I asked him, what was it like being in America during the recent presidential election? He said to me, well, it was like the man sitting on the deck of the Titanic with a glass of whiskey in his hand, and he's saying, I know I asked for ice. But this is ridiculous. So, is there something we can do, each of us, to be able to face the future without fear? I think there is. And one way into it is to see that perhaps the most simple way into a culture and into an age is to ask, what do people worship? People have worshipped so many different things, the sun, the stars, the storm. Some people worship many gods, some one, some none. In the 19th and 20th centuries, people worshipped the nation, the Aryan race, the communist state. What do we worship? I think future anthropologists will take a look at the books we read on self-help, self-realization, self-esteem. They'll look at the way we talk about morality as being true to oneself, the way we talk about politics as a matter of individual rights, and they'll look at this wonderful new religious ritual we have created. You know the one? Called the selfie. And I think they'll conclude that what we worship in our time is the self, the me, the I. And this is great. It's liberating, it's empowering, it's wonderful. But don't forget that biologically we're social animals. We spent most of our evolutionary history in small groups. We need those face-to-face interactions where we learn the choreography of altruism, and where we create those spiritual goods like friendship and trust and loyalty and love that redeem our solitude. When we have too much of the I and too little of the we can find ourselves vulnerable, fearful, and alone. It was no accident that Sherry Turkle of MIT called the book she wrote on the impact of social media Alone Together. So I think the simplest way of safeguarding the future you is to strengthen the future us in three dimensions: the us of relationship, the us of identity, and the us of responsibility. So let me first take the us of relationship, and here, forgive me if I get personal. Once upon a time, a very long time ago, I was a 20-year-old undergraduate studying philosophy. I was into Nietzsche and Schopenhauer and Sartre and Camus. I was full of ontological uncertainty
and existential angst. It was terrific. I was self-obsessed and thoroughly unpleasant to know, until one day I saw across the courtyard a girl who was everything that I wasn't. She radiated sunshine. She emanated joy. I found out her name was Elaine. We met, we talked, we married, and 47 years, 3 children and 8 grandchildren later, I can safely say, was the best decision I ever took in my life, because it's the people not like us that make us grow. And that is why I think we have to do just that. The trouble with Google filters, Facebook friends, and reading the news by narrowcasting rather than broadcasting means that we're surrounded almost entirely by people like us, whose views, whose opinions, whose prejudices even are just like ours. And Cass Sunstein of Harvard has shown that if we surround ourselves with people with the same views as us, we get more extreme. I think we need to renew those face-to-face encounters with the people not like us. I think we need to do that in order to realize that we can disagree strongly and yet still stay friends. It's in those face-to-face encounters that we discover that the people not like us are just people like us. And actually, every time we hold out the hand of friendship to what somebody not like us, whose class or creed or color are different from ours, we heal one of the fractures of our wounded world. That is the us of relationship. Second is the us of identity. Let me give you a thought experiment. Have you been to Washington? Have you seen the memorials? Absolutely fascinating. There's the Lincoln Memorial. Gettysburg Address on one side, second inaugural on the other. You go to the Jefferson Memorial, screeds of text. Martin Luther King Memorial, more than a dozen quotes from his speeches. I didn't realize in America you read memorials. Now go to the equivalent in London in Parliament Square, and you will see that the monument to David Lloyd George contains 3 words. David Lloyd George. Nelson Mandela gets 2, Churchill gets just 1, Churchill. Why the difference? I'll tell you why the difference, because America was from the outset a nation of wave after wave of immigrants, so it had to create an identity, which it did by telling a story which you learned at school, you read on memorials, and you heard repeated in presidential inaugural addresses. Britain, until recently, wasn't a nation of immigrants, so it could take identity for granted. The trouble is now that 2 things have happened which shouldn't have happened together. The first thing is, in the West, we've stopped telling the story of who we are and why, even in America. And at the same time, immigration is higher than it's ever been before. So when you tell the story and your identity is strong, you can welcome the stranger. But when you stop telling the story, your identity gets weak and you feel threatened by the stranger. And that's bad. I tell you, Jews have been scattered and dispersed and exiled for 2,000 years. We never lost our identity. Why? Because at least once a year on the festival of Passover, we told our story and we taught it to our children and we ate the unleavened bread of affliction and tasted the bitter herbs of slavery. So we never lost our identity. I think collectively we've got to get back to telling our story, who we are, where we came from, what ideals by which we live. And if that happens, we will become strong enough to welcome the stranger and say, come and share our lives, share our stories, share our aspirations and dreams. That is the us of identity. And finally, the us of responsibility. Do you know something? My favorite phrase in all of politics, very American phrase, is we the people.
Why we the people? Because it says that we all share collective responsibility for our collective future. And that's how things really are and should be. Have you noticed how magical thinking has taken over our politics? So we say, all you've got to do is elect this strong leader, and he or she will solve all our problems for us. Believe me, that is magical thinking. And then we get the extremes, the far right, the far left, the extreme religious and the extreme anti-religious, the far right dreaming of a golden age that never was, the far left dreaming of a utopia that never will be, and the religious and anti-religious equally convinced that all it takes is God or the absence of God to save us from ourselves. That too is magical thinking, because the only people who will save us from ourselves is we, the people, all of us together. And when we do that, and when we move from the politics of me to the politics of all of us together, we rediscover those beautiful counterintuitive truths that a nation is strong when it cares for the weak, that it becomes rich when it cares for the poor, it becomes invulnerable when it cares about the vulnerable. That is what makes great nations. So here is my simple suggestion. It might just change your life, and it might just help to begin to change the world. Do a search and replace operation on the text of your mind. And wherever you encounter the word self, substitute the word other. So instead of self-help, other help. Instead of self-esteem, other esteem. And if you do that, you will begin to feel the power of what for me is one of the most moving sentences in all of religious literature. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. We can face any future without fear, so long as we know we will not face it alone. So, for the sake of the future you, together, let us strengthen the future us. Thank you.
My God, that was beautiful. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks from England, he sent all his love through this message that's worth so much today, more than ever, to all Americans, wherever you are. We the people, that who will make the difference in the world. And you know, you guys are a beacon of freedom and happiness of all the world. Do you guys understand what America means to us all in the rest of the world? Without you, we don't have hope, as we say. Well, we have God, of course, but I'm saying you guys are the leaders that we follow. You are the light that we go after. You are the direction that we all want to see going some good places. All right, so get your act together. I'm telling you as an American that I'm looking out and I'm saying what they're doing. You know, get over it. And of course, there will be another election, okay? No, but right now, we are busy. Now, let's listen to a song before we'll wrap it up and we'll be after that.
Thank you.
sale, sapore di mare, che hai sulla pelle, che hai sulle labbra, quando esci dall'acqua e ti vieni a sdraiare.
All right, guys, I give you the Italian song, sapore di mare, you know, it's sapore di sale, sapore di mare, it's the essence of salt, essence of beach, to remind you all that there is a vacation time in Italy, that it's taking place as we speak now. They're all having fun on the beaches of Italy, on the Riviera, having a blast. Trust me, their music is loud, they are dancing, they're having fun, and we all have to get our act together and get some of that, all right? So this is to all my Italian friends in Italy. I love you, I miss you, I wish I was there, that's for sure. Now, we are wrapping up our show today with the hope that nothing happened in between to the next week show. Before we go to our, you know, the end of the month's break, you know, it's the wrapping up of the Jewish year. We have a celebration. We have all kind of parties. Not real party like in Italy. They know to do it. Just, you know, high and by. And they talk politics all the time, and they warn, you know, if anything happens in between this week, if Hezbollah decided to attack, it will be a really, really bad mistake, because we are all out and about, and we really are not in the mood, okay? So I better suggest to the Hezbollah that try to run their mouths really loud and vocal, and to get their act together and become a political party like their friends. Those terrorists around are still terrorists, right? Syria is still in the midst. There are thousands of kids are still misplaced. Millions of people misplaced. Yes, this is the end of the Jewish year. We still have to wrap it up that way. But listen, we have another week. Next week, I'll try to make a run-up before that. All right. God bless you all. I love you. I miss you. Orly Benny Davis checking out. Ciao, ciao.